This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Next on Reboot Your Life.
How a former Marine hit it big in Hollywood by keeping focus and using integrity. Then we eyewitness the biggest American solar event in 20 years, creating thousands of citizen scientists and why it mattered to so many of us.
From Riverside Recovery, it's Reboot Your Life. Experience the ultimate reboot of your journey. Start anew and rediscover you. Transform your story. Rewrite your life. It's Reboot Your Life with Carrie Harrison and Ashley Neal.
And from the Riverside Recovery Studios in Tampa, Florida, Carrie Harrison with you along with Ashley Neal. And thanks for listening to Reboot Your Life, where we help you get back to life you love.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen. Each week, you'll get new episodes both on the radio and every streaming platform. You can also tweet us at Reboot Your Life.
Imagine a former U.S. Marine who has transitioned into a renowned television and film star. Now, you may remember him for his comedic brilliance in Tyler Perry's For Better or Worse as Todd. However, Brad James is now embracing a new challenge alongside Regina King in Netflix's biopic Shirley, where he brings to life the role of Black Panther co-founder Huey Newton, a name that we all are familiar with. Shirley Chisholm, by the way, was an extraordinary early hero in her groundbreaking pursuit of the 1972 Democratic presidential nomination following her historic election as the first Black woman in Congress. Well, that is a piece of history that a lot of us may not remember. And if you're really young, you didn't even know it happened. Now you will when you watch Shirley. Brad James, we want to welcome you to the show.
Hey, I'm really glad to be on this show.
You've had an incredible journey from the military all the way to the entertainment industry, probably more or less the same in many ways as far as pain and suffering. Yet your military background has influenced your approach to acting, and it shows. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I have this conversation with other actors all the time that, you know, to act means to do or to be. It doesn't mean to pretend. It means to take action. And I think one of the great things that we can do is reach in our own toolbox of experiences. So those of us that have come from other walks of life just have different things to add to the table. And I think that's what makes it an ongoing, continuous art. So, you know, I didn't kind of walk away from being a Marine. I just bring it to my next profession.
Your role in Shirley introduces you to a pivotal historical figure, and something that we need to hear more about in our current history, especially with geopolitics going south, in my opinion. What drew you to portraying Huey Newton, and how did you prepare for, I mean, talk about a significant role?
You know, Huey's accomplishments even can dwarf the story of him as a human being in terms of just what people know. So anytime you have a chance to show the actual human being behind the legend or the things that are said or spread about them, those are just the kind of things that I look for. It's very drawing to me. Regina King being a part of the production, producing it and starring as Shirley Chisholm is also a very strong draw. So you just know that it's going to be at a certain level and quality.
You know, you're a multifaceted artist, and you balance work not only as an actor, as a writer, as a producer, as a director. You probably eat, maybe do laundry occasionally, possibly sleep in between. By now, you probably have a preference for particular kinds of roles.
I do, but I think it's less the kind of role and now the totality of the story for me. But I do love a nice chance to jump out of a window or just clown around and have great jokes with friends. So I love comedy and action.
Now, if I remember, you had an ankle accident, I think, when you were still in the Marine Corps, yet you seem to love to do your own stunts. Of course, that's fascinating to all of us. So you really do. Like, you plow through this stuff with a bad ankle. Takes a little extra prowess, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. I'm coming up to some decisions. There's a couple of things that I definitely let the stunt professionals do. I say anything where I'm on fire or underwater, you guys got it. So I think we learn a little bit as we get older.
That would be called common sense, I think.
Yeah.
If you're gonna play with matches, you do it in the corner. I'll be over here. Family. plays a significant role in your life. How has becoming a father influenced your approach to your career and your creative projects?
You know, when I got in this business, I was already a father. So it's so interesting starting all over again. My youngest son, Knight James, just turned one on the 4th, and he's growing, it seems like double every day. So it's pretty amazing. And again, those are those real life experiences that you hope to be able to bring back to some of the characters you get to portray.
We're talking to Brad James. You'll know him from various films such as The Choice, Parental Guidance with Billy Crystal and Bette Midler, Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman, NCIS New Orleans, Devious Maids, Heart of Dixie, and recurring roles in the critically acclaimed series Underground. Aside from his acting prowess, Brad James is also leaving a mark as a talented writer, a producer, a director, breathing life into engaging and enlightening narratives, and now playing Huey Long in the Netflix series Shirley, which is a piece of history that you're going to want to learn about and you're going to get to learn about, because I don't know that I've met anybody in the last 5 years who doesn't have Netflix. So that bodes well for you, my friend, as far as being able to tell history. And you're like super smart. So I think you actually enjoy the fact that you're teaching while entertaining.
You know, I think that was really our writer, John Ridley, I think that was really his goal. Was to teach and entertain at the same time. It's just really great when you have a partnership of people who come together and have common goals for things like that. But when I watched the film, I learned a lot more about the political process. I mean, there's always something to learn about how elections happen, but it's the history of how they got to where they are now that I hope people are taking from this.
Do you think that voting is more important than ever, or is it just kind of the same as it always has been?
I think it's always been important, but I think definitely what this teaches us to do is be informed voters. And I don't just mean about the candidates. I mean about the process that it takes to get, those that we want to represent us elected. And that's like Congress, and that's like the presidency. A lot of times we just, look for that top name on the ballot. But your local elections are really important because they start to put people in positions.
Yeah. I mean, the dog catcher is important because he's walking everybody's streets and does have a sphere of influence. It's like the mailman. If he were to get COVID and you weren't offering any treatments for any kind of communicable disease, he's putting mail in every single box, mile after mile. This is how the vector of disease spreads. So it makes sense to have that good infrastructure from the ground up. You've showcased a diverse range of characters in your career. Is there a particular type of role that you find most challenging or rewarding to portray?
Sometimes you don't really know until you're in the thick of it. But I've been really fortunate to play some nice sci-fi characters. I had a great time on another Netflix series called Outer Banks. Kind of playing that cop role, chasing after the kids. But all in all, definitely just those roles that are fun and memorable. You know, we just want to do good stuff out here. So I'm such an artist. I just want to, I kind of want to roll around in that. And we have to make other, types of productions. But as an artist, you just want to go out there and do your thing.
You know, I noticed that a lot of science fiction, at least the science fiction that I watched, was about all of it, actually, frankly. It's my favorite genre. There's always Marines. Like, when in doubt, just throw the Marines in because it somehow fits. I'll bet that.
Well, you want the best. You want the best is what it is,
How about your fellow Marines? From they must reach out to you and go, Jesus, I just saw you do this. This is so cool. You know, I wish we could have done that. Well, we don't know how to fly with these things yet.
the Brotherhood of the Marine Corps is really amazing, and it's really deep. We celebrate Marine Corps birthday every year, and a lot of the guys that I've been in old units with, they do reach out from time to time when they see something, and we connect when we can. So I'm really grateful for them.
I'm going to give you an unsolicited compliment here, Brad James, but you engage and inspire young people through speeches and mentorship programs. This is not something that everyone does. We wish everyone did, but for some reason, you see the value in that, which is good. You get 8 extra stars on Yelp for that. How do you see yourself making a difference in their lives?
I think it's multi-tiered. You know, there's so much that you can say, but everyone doesn't take information from just hearing something audibly. I think that, you know, the best thing that we can do is continue to move forward, believe in yourself, and live by example. You know, just showcase what it is that you're doing and how to do it and share. I did an amazing sci-fi series with Mario Van Peebles a few years ago, and he's, you know, he was one of my favorite directors over the years. And one thing that he did really, really well that I hope I took from him is share. You know, he let me direct on some of the scenes, and he was just he was very giving. So I hope that each one teach one thing kind of keeps rolling on.
It seems that artists have this unique ability to see what we, the customers, the citizens, the little mammals, the upright people walking around down here in the mud, we
don't minimize yourself.
Thank you. I was talking about her or him, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you actually see it because you replicate that condition. You actually have to look deeply into a situation in order to be able to replicate it and make it believable, which means you learn a lot about human nature, about what's going on, about the ebb and flow of people's personalities and desires and needs. This is going to be a complex question, but you're brilliant, so mm-hmm. It'll be easy for you to answer. What would you want to see the world begin to look like, given what's going on today, knowing what people are really all about? Do you think it's possible to have a better world at this point?
Absolutely. You know, I'm glad you said that, and you set it up in that kind of way, because what does end up happening is that you can, especially as an actor who is a student of a character, especially when you're doing a biopic, is that we do hyper focus on certain aspects of those people. And so for me, you know, with Huey Newton, what I decided to do was just read a lot of his words, things that he had personally written, so I could get the voice that he was hearing in his head. So I wanted to get that really good understanding of 1972 Huey Newton, you know, not a few years earlier or later. You know, those nuances become important because you're dealing with different things in your life at different times. And so that's definitely the energy that, you know, in the micro study of, you know, delving into a character and taking it to where you want it to be seen. And what was the second part of your question?
Actually, you just nailed the three parts of the question. There were only two parts, so it was just absolutely perfect. And I realized, I think I said Huey Long earlier.
Huey Long, yeah.
Not anything like Huey Newton.
Well, you're not necessarily, because he was the inspiration for Huey's name. So he was named after Huey Long.
And for people who are maybe a lot younger and not bent toward history, though they will be once they watch, surely they're going to get the full picture. Tell us a little bit about Huey Newton. Many people just know, oh, I believe that was the name of a band, but it was more.
Yeah, Huey Newton was essentially a guy who in college with some friends of his were able to articulate and understand problems that they saw in society and begin to look for solutions to change the things that they didn't like in their world. And what they started was the Black Panther Party for the People. Huey Newton and Bobby Seale, they connected and started a movement, and it kind of inspired all over the United States, and they began to reach outside to other countries in the world. But it was an ongoing set of programs and understandings that, you know, in the words of Bruce Lee, was like water. When things change, they adapted. And, you know, one of the things that I think they were the most proud of was their free food program and other things that affected children in the communities. So that's a little bit about them and their influence.
One of the most prescient, if not perspicacious, comedians out there is Chris Rock, my opinion. I think he is a soothsayer like nobody else. And he said, if you really want to have gun control, just do like a 50% off handgun sale for all, you know, Black men in America. And if you go back to the Black Panthers, if I remember historically, Governor Reagan at the time pointed out that these Black Panthers have handguns. And lo and behold, there was a huge ban all across California, people throwing their guns into buckets, getting rid of them left and right, because, you know, it depends who has the guns. And I think that's the lesson we get in watching some of these series. We get real history, and then we get perspective, which is everything in life, right?
Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
Finally, what can audiences expect from your upcoming projects? And are there any specific roles or genres you're eager to explore in the future?
Oh, man, for sure. The feature I'm shooting now is a ridiculous airplane love story shot by
airplane love story.
Airplane love. That may be an alternate name for this film, but we're having such a great time shooting it. I can't wait for you guys to see it. And then after that, I have an action feature coming up called Nothing Even Matters, and it's really a nice revenge story, if there's such a thing. So we're gonna get to play a lot.
All right,
Mike, well, call a stunt double.
Oh, this yes. You said you like all your stunt doubles, or you are all your stunt doubles?
Yeah, no. I might call a stunt double for this one.
Okay,
but it'll be a lot of fun.
I actually, a fellow Marine of yours, or no way, he's 101st Airborne. He's the actual Bionic Man. And this is after the 1980s Lee Major series. He came back from Iraq and, like you, very smart. And the DOD wanted a guy that could actually be responsive to what he was going through. And they used new technology, a titanium plate leg that actually screws into his femur, and it's got all kinds of electrodes and cool stuff. He can run at 1,000 miles an hour, but his other leg can't. So it's like, cool bionic, but don't do it, because it's not going to work. So, yeah, it takes like special guys like you to show up, and I think you're being smart by using a stunt double, because if the other leg won't behave, well, it's just going to be a mess. I'm so glad you came on today. You're so much fun. And we very much look forward to watching Shirley and everything else you do. So glad you've been here today with us.
Yes, thanks a lot. You were great.
Brad James is a former Marine, now television and film star, fueling the Netflix biopic Shirley. You'll remember him for his comedic brilliance in Tyler Perry's For Better or Worse, films such as The Choice, Parental Guidance with Billy Crystal and Bette Midler, Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman, NCIS New Orleans, Devious Maids, and the critically acclaimed series Underground. Well, the recent total solar eclipse marked a new milestone in American history, with thousands of us as citizen scientists feeding back data. So how is this changing us along with technology? Well, that's next.
Hang on. Your reboot reboots in a moment.
You can tweet us anytime on X at Reboot Your Life.
Riverside Recovery of Tampa was created to offer state-of-the-art treatment options to people suffering from addiction. The model was developed to meet clients and their families where they are at and provide them with the tools and education needed so that they can achieve long-term recovery. No two people are the same, and no two people have the same experience with addiction, and it is for this reason that we tailor each treatment plan to the unique needs of each individual. Located alongside the Hillsborough River in the heart of Tampa, Riverside Recovery offers the full continuum of care, and what that means is that we offer medical detoxification, residential care, day treatment, intensive outpatient, and outpatient levels of care. The program at Riverside is focused on high-quality clinical care offered in a safe, comfortable, and serene environment where everyone feels empowered to change the course of their lives. The stigma that surrounds addiction continues to be high on the list of reasons that people do not seek help. At Riverside Recovery, we are working to change the narrative and empower people to recognize addiction as a disease, not a moral failing. We can recover, and we do, as evidenced by the thousands of people who have taken that courageous first step and asking for help. The staff at Riverside understand what it's like to recover. In fact, over 75% of our staff are in long-term recovery. If you or someone you know needs help and are ready to seek treatment, call Riverside Recovery of Tampa at 1-800-871-5440. That's 800-871-5440. You can learn more about the treatment we provide at rrtampa.com. Again, that's rrtampa.com.
Life 2.0. It's your life and your reboot. It's Reboot Your Life with Carrie Harrison and Ashley Neal.
You know, in a world where scientific research meets public engagement, there's an interesting cross-section of knowledge and curiosity. Have you ever heard of SciStarter? Well, our next guest is on a mission to democratize science. That means all of us get to do it, involving the public in the research process.
She's not just a manager, she's a catalyst for change, inspiring 1 million acts of science using citizen science, which enables people from all walks of life to advance scientific research. Emma Giles is the manager of public outreach and programs at SciStarter, an initiative of Arizona State University.
She's not only the creative force behind SciStarter Live, but we're recording this interview exactly in the first during this total eclipse, the first one in 20 years, as it passes across North America. Emma Giles, we're so happy you're joining us to walk us through what millions will be watching or will have watched by the time they see or hear this. Welcome to Reboot Your Life.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
We're glad you're here. We know this is like your Halloween, your New Year's Eve, your wedding night, all of it wrapped into one. This is it. This is your 20-year moment. Can you explain why this phenomenon and NASA is paying such close attention?
Yeah, absolutely. So even though that the total solar eclipses do happen every once in a while, they just traverse different parts of the globe and are difficult to travel to, they are really, really unique experiences. And because they're relatively infrequent, we don't know everything about eclipses. And we actually use eclipses to study nuances in science that we can't study otherwise. So a great example of this is heliophysics. So that's the study of the sun, physics of the sun. And so there are quite a few NASA scientists doing all kinds of projects that invite people to help them as they're across the path of totality or off the path of totality, doing projects where they're downloading an app and taking images of what they see, or they are amateur astronomers and using actual telescopes to take images of the corona and even more.
And there are people all over the world simultaneously participating in this. Yes, I know those of us who watch TV or read the newspaper, we're just putting on our goggles and like observing this thing. But then there's a chunk of humanity that has figured out a lot through your work that they can co-participate and study this and give reports and data. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So SciStarter itself is a database. And so through our work, we help publicize a lot of these opportunities alongside the organizations that create them. And so we are here to help promote the opportunities available to people. So they go online to our website. We have an eclipse site itself, scistarter.org/eclipse, where you can learn about different projects. And they range from downloading an app, like I mentioned, and holding it up to face the sun for all of totality, to where you have observations through multi-sensory experiences. So that's a very popular one, especially with younger people too, like kids, where you can use all your senses to really define everything. So they're really accessible projects to the public, things where you don't need heavy technology, and you can just use your own experience to really fill in the blanks for science.
Now, I feel like I have to speak up for the non-scientists in the room. I've seen several people posting on different social media sites, you know, didn't we just have an eclipse a couple years ago? Can you explain the difference in the recent eclipse that we had and then also the one that will be happening today?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah. So for the general public in 2017, we had a total eclipse. That's very similar to this one. There's vague differences. For example, the visibility of planets today, there will be, I think you'll be able to see Jupiter and Venus if my memory serves. And there's also a comet that will also be visible. So during this total solar eclipse, we'll be able to see the stars. You'll be able to see more than just the eclipse. 2017, we had the eclipse, not necessarily all the visibility of the planets. And we did not have a comet back in 2017, but it went across a very similar area too. If you look at the map, I'm in Missouri, so they experienced it back in 2017. 2023 in October, we had an annular eclipse, which is slightly different. So it's not totality. It's like a very, it's an interesting looking partial eclipse. So it's just a very unique, without going into the weeds, it's just a unique looking partial eclipse.
All right. Thank you.
Emma Giles, you clearly love what you do, and that's part of the purpose of this show, is to get back the life you love and figure out what it is that is your particular passion and your niche. You started by studying caterpillars and climate change in Arizona, and that was a game changer for you. Can you share a memorable experience from your time in that exploration, how it kind of got you to where you are today?
Sure. Interestingly, that's kind of halfway through my experience. So that was a really momentous experience for me. But during that time, I was also a fifth grade math and science teacher. And that actually was the real changing moment for me where I didn't anticipate going into science in general. And I really loved teaching, and I loved being around kids so that they could feel more excitement towards things that they don't necessarily get to experience the rest of their life. As adults, we don't necessarily experience a lot of science unless we look for it. And it feels like we have to be a scientist to contribute. And so when I was accepted as a fellow for the Caterpillars and Climate Change fellowship through Teach Earth, that allowed me to really go into the field, for example, to say, so it's real field work with real scientists to see what that experience is like, so that we could give it to students when we come back to the classroom. And so I discovered that caterpillars are my number one animal on the planet Earth, which is the weirdest thing for people to hear, especially when I say on the flip side, I also don't like butterflies. I find butterflies to be,
well, meh. Of course. I mean, who likes butterflies?
They're just kind of gross. I learned a lot about butterflies that I kind of, you can't unhear things after you learn too much. And so if you go too deep into certain concepts, you learn a little bit more than you expected.
Well, then I guess I'm not going to take you down to Key West to the Butterfly Museum, which has 30 or 40,000 free-flying butterflies that land all over you. You would not love that. You would want to take me to the Caterpillar Museum, where I could have caterpillars crawling on me for the pure pleasure that you know I would receive.
That would be awesome. I mean, caterpillars are, they've got some weird adaptations too, but generally speaking, they're just weirdly cleaner. They're cleaner in general. They're not, they exist to eat, which I really appreciate. And so just living their lives, eating and running around plants and just protecting themselves from predators is their life. And they're a key indicator for climate change, actually, which is why that study exists, is seeing their populations change determines if we see, it's called phenological asynchrony, but what that means is essentially the seasons change with where the animals are. And so we have animals in existence when they shouldn't be yet. Like there's too much during a certain part of the year. And so our food chain gets all messed up.
Emma, this is Citizen Science Month, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us why this is such an important initiative?
Absolutely. Yeah. Citizen Science Month is our 1 month a year where we have an excuse to party it up, citizen science style, is the best way to put it, where we put all of our efforts into doing as much citizen science as humanly possible. And what that means is any project. It does not have to be about the eclipse, since that's so infrequent anyway. We instead do all kinds of science. So we do everything from life science, where you're going outside and taking pictures of animals or plants or fungi, et cetera, and helping identify them, all the way to astronomy, where I really enjoy a project where you're labeling clouds on Mars. So you're basically the first meteorologists of Mars. So every type of science is involved in that. And this year is special because of the 1 million acts of science. So we're aiming for 1 million data points to be sent in to scientists during this month, which we're already at, I think it's over 300 something thousand. So we're in a good spot to be a couple days in.
Carrie Harrison and Ashley Neal with you, and this is Reboot Your Life. We're talking Emma Giles, Senior Science Coordinator and Manager of Public Outreach and Programs at SciStarter with Arizona State University. She's the creative force behind SciStarter Live, a citizen science initiative that allows regular people to participate in scientific research. And we're recording this interview during America's first total eclipse in 20 years, so it's an extraordinary moment. We have technology. It's ubiquitous. There are very few humans in this country that don't have access to some kind of technology. And now you found a way to put people together, as Ashley just pointed out, in this citizen science, which is evolving and growing. And this changes people's lives when they actually get to see existentially how climate change might affect them, how science might affect them, how life actually affects them. It's not theoretical on Netflix. They're living it.
Your reboot reboots in a moment.
You can tweet us anytime on X at Reboot Your Life.
Riverside Recovery of Tampa was created to offer state-of-the-art treatment options to people suffering from addiction. The model was developed to meet clients and their families where they are at and provide them with the tools and education needed so that they can achieve long-term recovery. No two people are the same, and no two people have the same experience with addiction, and it is for this reason that we tailor each treatment plan to the unique needs of each individual. Located alongside the Hillsborough River in the heart of Tampa, Riverside Recovery offers the full continuum of care, and what that means is that we offer medical detoxification, residential care, day treatment, intensive outpatient, and outpatient levels of care. The program at Riverside is focused on high-quality clinical care offered in a safe, comfortable, and serene environment where everyone feels empowered to change the course of their lives. The stigma that surrounds addiction continues to be high on the list of reasons that people do not seek help. At Riverside Recovery, we are working to change the narrative and empower people to recognize addiction as a disease, not a moral failing. We can recover, and we do, as evidenced by the thousands of people who have taken that courageous first step and asking for help. The staff at Riverside understand what it's like to recover. In fact, over 75% of our staff are in long-term recovery. If you or someone you know needs help and are ready to seek treatment, call Riverside Recovery of Tampa at 1-800-871-5440. That's 800-871-5440. You can learn more about the treatment we provide at rrtampa.com. Again, that's rrtampa.com.
Life 2.0. It's your life and your reboot. It's Reboot Your Life with Carrie Harrison and Ashley Neal.
And this is Reboot Your Life. We're talking to Emma Giles, Senior Science Coordinator, Manager of Public Outreach and Programs at SciStarter with Arizona State University, the creative force behind SciStarter Live. We're talking right now as the recent 20-year phenomenon of the solar eclipse unfolds, what people are experiencing. And Emma Giles, I imagine there's a real mythology surrounding solar eclipses. Oh my, it's the end of the world. It's terrible. We know now this is not true, and your citizen sciences bear this out. But can you talk a little about the mythology, why it was always a terrible thing coming?
Sure. I can give one particular example. It's not my area of study, but I before the eclipse, I went deep into a lot of science podcasts, especially. So big podcaster here. And a lot of, there is a particular story that I remember where in history of Mesopotamia, there were basically astrologers and astronomers, early astronomy, where they could predict solar eclipses, but it was still like, it was viewed as a bad omen. And so if you're looking at a solar eclipse and you don't fully understand what's going on back in the day, it's particularly scary, and it still does incite that kind of fear or anxiety for some people, or this uncanniness of weird experience where we can't wrap our brains around it. And so, back in the day, it meant things, omens, as in there would be famine or there would be some kind of disaster. And so, it's just a very strange experience to have. Even the animals react pretty strongly. And so, this is definitely one of those. There's definitely a lot of ideas or even conspiracy within one's brain to be able to handle the experience itself.
Ashley and I are we're fairly boned up on science, but you know, we don't live it 24 hours a day, which you do, which we know is a pleasure, and I vote yes for that, by the way. Can you help people who might be not exactly sure what is an eclipse? Like, a lot of people don't want to say, I don't think I really know what that is, because it's an embarrassing thing to say. Can you tell us, what is an eclipse?
Yeah, absolutely. The general idea, the one definition that everyone should know if they want to be able to say, I know what an eclipse is the Earth is lined up with the moon in between us and the sun. And so the moon is blocking the sun. That's for a solar eclipse, right? So it's the opposite for a lunar eclipse, where the sun, where the Earth is actually blocking the sun from the moon, where we don't see the moon. So it's the idea that we just have an alignment, a nice cosmic coincidence of alignment, where we have just something blocking out the sun, the moon. And so we end up seeing in a total eclipse, you see the corona, so the outside of it, that ring of fire, that is the corona, which is actually the atmosphere of the sun. And then if you see when it starts moving across, there's like a almost like a diamond ring is what it's related to as most, is actually referred to as Bailey's beads, which is in fact, the valleys and mountains of the moon, where the sun is peeking through those mountains and valleys. So pretty cool to be able to see that.
You recommend, Emma Giles, citizen science is basically a year-long activity, not a minute long, not a week long, but a year long. There's a reason you're thinking that commitment makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there are so many different types of citizen science projects, everyone can just find a new one every other day if they wanted to. But in fact, there are projects where if you really do love a certain type of science, a lot of citizen science is dedicated to finding long-term answers. And so examples are thinking of Bud Burst, which is a phenology project out of Chicago, which phenology in this scenario is referring to seasonal changes of plants. And so we're looking at how plants are changing through the seasons, and that takes a lot of time. So there are ways in which we've had a lot of data to use because we have citizen scientists doing this for decades. And that helps us understand if things are changing, if flowers are blooming earlier. We know that the cherry blossoms in DC are a whole month earlier because of work in phenology, where people have been reporting on what they see.
So this should not be a controversial question, but for some reason it is in certain parts of the earth. Climate change seems to be not just a made up word. We know that in Miami during high tides now, the sidewalks are underwater, something when they built the city, they were not underwater at high tide. So things are actually changing. NASA is considering in the National Hurricane Center in Miami, creating a Category 6 hurricane, although they feel, why bother after a 5? But things are actually changing, at least with citizen scientists. You've got regular people living somewhere that are saying, yeah, I saw that too. So that's probably a hopeful thing, though, ultimately, is that the more we know, the more we know, and the more we can deal and invent our way through a problem.
Yeah, in fact, there's a really popular project in Florida specifically that's called I See Change. It is across the nation and possibly global. I've never tried to look it up from a different country, but I See Change is one in which it's climate reporting. All you're doing is going on outside, seeing some kind of crazy behavior in the weather or some kind of result from the weather. So flooding is a great example there, where you're taking a picture of that extreme circumstance and sending it in. It's almost like going online for a social media to complain about the weather. But the best part about this is that this particular app, especially in Florida, connects you with emergency response services. So if there is an issue of I'm reporting flooding in an area, that report goes to the right people who can solve the problem. And so that's a big one in Florida. Actually, my colleague works really, really actively with I See Change in Florida.
What is the name of that app again? Because I'm totally downloading it.
Absolutely. I See Change. So I-S-E-E Change. Yeah.
All right. Well, finally, one last question. You got into this. You could have done, you know, obviously, I see a genius level brain here, IQ of 160 plus. So I would unleash you toward anything I want to get done well and brilliantly. You picked like this interesting niche of helping people understand their relationship with life and science, really the existential side, like the universe. What is my connection to the universe? Have you learned something watching people connect with the universe?
Frame this as just from my own experience, and I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to. When I started getting a little bit more involved in taking the time to really try to understand science and actively engage with it as a non-scientist. I'm not a trained scientist in caterpillars, for example. I was minorly trained. I come from a teaching background. And so if you give yourself the time to look at science for yourself, you start to find beauty in the smallest things. Caterpillars are my best example, being just the fact that they are just food tubes. Like, that's just such a fun existence, and it tells us so much about other things. So when you start giving yourself the time to breathe and look at something in the world that interests you, the amount of discovery you can make is just, it's beautiful and causes you existential crises left and right, but in a good way, especially eclipses, right? Like I didn't get to experience the one in 2017 along totality. And so this is one of those moments where I have a little bit of anxiety of, oh gosh, how am I going to react? What is this going to mean to me? Because for some people, it is an incredibly spiritual experience and something that impacts them for decades. They become umbrophiles, where they follow eclipses everywhere. So catch me in Iceland in 2026 for the one that crosses there.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Emma Giles, Senior Science Coordinator, Manager of Public Outreach and Programs at SciStarter with Arizona State University. She's the creative force behind SciStarter Live, which is a citizen science initiative that allows regular people to not only see this on their own screens, but participate in scientific research. That means all of us get to help make a better future for each other. And we're recording this interview during America's first total eclipse in 20 years. And this has been great fun. We're so glad you joined us today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
From Riverside Recovery, it's Reboot Your Life. Are you familiar with Riverside Recovery of Tampa? Well, they offer a profound, all-embracing approach to addiction treatment. With a dedicated team of empathetic professionals, Riverside Recovery is committed to guiding individuals on their path to enduring recovery, using a variety of science-backed therapies, counseling, and support services. Riverside Recovery values the individuality of every recovery journey. Their tailored treatment plans respond to the specific needs, the hurdles, the goals of each resident, providing effective aid regardless of whether you're taking your first steps in recovery or maintaining your progress. With Riverside, recovery isn't just achievable, it's an influential journey towards a healthier, brighter future. The testimonials of those who've undergone treatment there are evidence of rediscovered self-worth and potential. Located on the tranquil Hillsborough River of Tampa, Riverside serves as a peaceful haven, promoting self-discovery and healing. They acknowledge that recovery is about more than just overcoming difficulties. It's also about finding your innate strength and resilience. The Riverside Recovery's committed team are your empathetic allies in your recovery journey. They comprehend that genuine healing involves the mind, the body, and the spirit, meticulously dealing with all facets of addiction. You can discover more at rrtampa.com. That's rrtampa.com. Or reach out at 1-800-871-5440. That's 800-871-5440. 800-871-5440 or rrtampa.com.
You can tweet us anytime on X at Reboot Your Life.
It's our Reboot Your Life hotline. We've set up a dedicated phone number so you can leave your comments, thoughts, and feedback whenever you'd like. It might even get on the air. Maybe you have a story that you feel needs to be shared or told. So, get it off your chest. Text or call our Reboot Your Life hotline at 323-8-REBOOT. That's 323-8-REBOOT.
So let's take a deep dive for a second into the fascinating world of alcoholism. Grab your favorite non-alcoholic beverage if you can and settle in. So let's explore the ins and outs of really a complex condition. First off, let's think about the brain. Your brain is like the control center of your entire body. It's responsible for everything from basic functions like breathing and blinking to more complex tasks like decision-making and emotions. Now, when someone starts drinking heavily, it's like throwing a wild party in the brain. Because alcohol just doesn't affect how you feel in the moment. It actually alters the chemistry of your brain. And this is like super important because this is the core of the issue. Why do people keep doing it over and over again? So it's like when you put alcohol in the brain, it's like tossing a bunch of rowdy guests into your city's streets, causing chaos and disruption. This is what's happening in the brain now. Alcohol messes with the neurotransmitters, which are like the messengers that allow your brain cells to communicate with each other. And specifically, it enhances the effects of inhibitory neurotransmitters like GABA, which makes you feel relaxed and sedated, while also dampening the activity of excitatory neurotransmitters like glutamate, which can impair your coordination and judgment. All these things are important chemicals in the body and are supposed to be balanced until you add booze into the equation. And if you have alcoholic tendencies, your biochemistry changes, whereas other people's simply does not, which is why it seems a mystery. So here's where things get really interesting. With repeated heavy drinking, your brain starts to adapt to the constant influx of alcohol. It's like the city installing barricades and roadblocks to try to maintain order amidst chaos. And over time, these adaptations can lead to tolerance, where you need more and more alcohol to achieve the same earlier effects. And then you have dependence, where your brain relies on the alcohol just to be able to function normally. In other words, no alcohol, no normal brain function anymore. So you actually need the alcohol to have what feels like a normally functioning brain. Then there's genetics. So your genes play a significant role in determining your risk of developing alcoholism. We all know about genes. We know about gene therapy. We've done DNA tests. We know that a lot of us have predispositions toward blonde hair, blue eyes, green eyes, brown eyes, dark skin, light skin. These are our genes. So with alcoholism, it's like having a genetic predisposition to certain health conditions. Some folks may have a family history of alcoholism, which increases their likelihood of experiencing similar struggles because it's genetic. And scientists have even identified specific genes that may influence susceptibility to alcoholism, including genes that are involved in alcohol metabolism, how you break it down, neurotransmitter signaling, how your brain processes while you're drinking, and of course, basic stress response. So here's the thing. Genes aren't your destiny. Just because you have a genetic predisposition to alcoholism doesn't mean you're destined to struggle with it. But your environment also plays a crucial role in shaping your drinking behaviors. So it's like nature versus nurture. While your genes may load the gun, your environment pulls the trigger. So think about it this way. If you grew up in a household where alcohol abuse is common, we don't call it that anymore, substance use disorder, really, if it's common, or hanging out with friends who drink heavily can increase your risk of developing a drinking problem yourself. So you kind of are what you eat and you are who you hang out with. It's like being surrounded by temptation at every turn. It makes it harder to resist the urge to indulge. So there's good news. Your brain is incredibly resilient. Just as a city can recover from a natural disaster, your brain can bounce back from the damage caused by alcoholism. And with the right treatment and support, you can actually start to rebuild those neural pathways and reclaim control over your life. Or as we say, and our friends at Riverside Recovery, you can get back the life you love. Treatment for alcoholism often involves a combination of therapies, which can include behavioral interventions or medications, support groups. It's like having a whole team of experts working together to help you on your journey to recovery. And behavioral therapies such as cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT as it's called, or motivational interviewing, or MI, these things can help you identify and change unhealthy patterns of thinking and behavior related to alcohol use. So there are medications like naltrexone, which is commonly used to help reduce cravings and prevent relapse. There are support groups like Alcoholics Anonymous, or AA as it's commonly called, and these provide a sense of community and understanding from others who have walked a similar path successfully. And let's not forget about the importance of self-care and lifestyle changes. Eating a healthy diet, just like they say, it matters. Getting regular exercise, it matters. And finding healthy ways to cope with stress can all play a role in supporting anybody's recovery journey. It's like laying down a solid foundation for a sturdy building. If you take care of yourself, you're setting yourself up for success in the long run. So whether you're struggling with alcohol yourself or you know someone who is, know that there is hope. And there are millions of people who have success stories of recovery. Because recovery is not only possible, but you don't have to face it alone. And with the right support and the right treatment, you can rewrite the story of your brain and build a brighter future. Carrie Harrison with you. This is Reboot Your Life. So appreciate your hanging with us, listening to us, watching us, writing to us, tweeting to us, and hanging out with us, and upskilling and finding that brighter future for yourself. Looking forward to seeing you next week, and I hope you have a great week.
I know a man named Otis who invented a room, and his heart was filled with pride. I said to Mr. Otis, "What does your room do?" He said, "It goes from side to side." So I said, "Mr. Otis, if you take my advice, you'll be the richest man in town. You gotta take that room that goes from side to side and make it go up and down."
And that was good advice, good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
I sincerely doubt that the world could do without my good advice. Sir Isaac Newton came around to my house one day. His face was all sunburned and red. He said he didn't want to sleep in the shade of a tree because an apple might fall on his head. I said, "Sir Isaac, you dumbbell, take my advice. Go right back there and sleep beneath that tree.
And if you let that rotten apple fall down on your head, why, you'll discover gravity.
And that was good advice. Good advice.
Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price. The world's a better place since I gave the human race my good advice. A man named Mr. Waterman invented a tube. He was sad because it sprung a little leak. He said, darn it, when I hold my tube on a piece of paper, the ink leaks out and makes a little streak. He said, I've got to find a way to stop that leak. I'll start working on my leak-proof tube again. I said, Waterman, you idiot, don't stop that leak. You just invented a fountain pen.
Good advice, good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
I'm so worldly wise, I should get the Nobel Prize for good advice. Good old Henry Ford, he was a hard-working man. He worked all night and all day. I said, Henry, what you doing? And Henry, he said, I'm inventing the Chevrolet. He said, I've already built 25 models, one for each letter from A to Z. I said, Henry, you fool, there are 26 letters in the alphabet. He said, good heavens, I forgot the Model T.
And that was good advice. Good advice. Good advice was nothing and it's worth the price.
As can be, and it's absolutely free. My
good advice.
Wilbur and Orville were two brothers named Wright, the nicest pair of kids you've ever seen. They worked 12 years on a secret project. They thought it was a washing machine. I said, fellas, what are all those wings for? They said, for hanging clothes out to dry. I said, you fools, take that washing machine out to Kitty Hawk and see if the darn thing will fly.
And that was good advice.
Good advice.
Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price.
I'm so smart that I'm gonna win a Guggenheim for good. Benjamin Franklin was a charming old man. He was always flying his kite. One night I said, Benji, why ain't you out with your kite? He said, because it's raining tonight. I said, Benji, sweetie, you go right back out there and to your kite string, tie a key. This may shock you, Benji, my boy, but that's electricity.
And that was good advice.
Good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price. I'll remodel you if you'll only listen to my good advice. Ookamagook was a Neanderthal man, a very poorly educated soul. He had a great big square thing made of solid stone, and in the middle of it was a hole. One day he had to go from his cave in Natchez to his uncle's cave in Mobile. I said, round off those corners and buy a set of tires, and ookie baby, that's a wheel.
Good advice.
Good advice. Good advice costs nothing and it's worth the price. Harvard offered me a Phi Beta Kappa key for good advice.